It's good to be with you. Thank you for your welcome. I did come here probably about 15 years ago when I was a visitor to Swanage, and I kind of came in when Will was the vicar then and snuck in at the back, but was very impressed then by this church. So it's great to come back now and experience breakfast at 9 too. I think I've got a bit of a big call this morning, haven't I, in terms of your theme. I want to begin with a story. Shortly before an Edinburgh Express train approached York Station, a rather small passenger called Brown confided to the only other occupant of his compartment, MacDonald, that he had some business to conduct in York and was pleased the train was arriving early. "Too bad," said MacDonald, "the train doesn't stop at York." Well, after various possibilities had been considered and discarded, a plan of action was agreed. MacDonald would lower Brown from an open window as the train passed slowly through York Station. And in order to improve his chances of standing upright when landing, Brown would wave his legs suitably during the descent. Well, all went well at first. Brown's legs thrashed the air. He landed well, shot down the platform, sidestepping the while to avoid any stationary object, and was slowing up satisfactorily when the guard's van of the accelerating train caught up with him. The burly Scottish guard didn't hesitate. Reaching out, he grabbed the runner firmly around the waist as he hauled him back on the train, shouting admirably, "Well done, laddie, you nearly missed it." A journey with a bit of an adventure. Well, today's gospel is about a journey. Two disciples alone pondering the events of their last few days. It's the gospel I've chosen to illustrate what you've asked me to speak about this morning. What is God saying to the church of this diocese? Now, that's quite a challenge, because exactly that I don't know in any kind of prophetic way. However, as I've come to get to know congregations and individuals and churches and Dorset, particularly as a whole, there are themes that I feel we need to develop. So I'm going to look at the passage, and then I want to highlight the importance, I feel, of three particular words for us. We hear at the beginning of this account in Luke's gospel that the two disciples were talking to one another as they walked along. I wonder what they said. How had this happened? What do we do now? Who really was this man, Jesus? Then, as the journey continued, Jesus joined them, asking them questions. What are you talking about? He was concerned, and as he heard their description of the week's events, he explained to them the scriptures. Think about those disciples, and thinking about them, I thought about the questions we often ask about life and about God. How? Why? When? And we can work out some of the answers for ourselves, but we need each other to help us. The disciples had one another to share their fears and their doubts with, and that's one of the roles, I believe, of the church. So together, we can draw close to Christ as we talk about him together. The walk to Emmaus also involved listening to God and to one another. In our passage, not only did Jesus listen to the disciples at the time when they were most downcast, but they listened to him. When he gave thanks at the end of their journey, they heard those familiar words and were able to recognize him. They said to one another, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened up the scriptures to us?" Jesus spoke truth to them, immediately reassuring them that they hadn't given up everything for nothing. Reassuring them that the last few years hadn't all been a waste of time. And Jesus is always willing to listen to us, and we need to be ready to listen to him. Times of silence and stillness are very important in our busy lives today. There's a story about a parishioner who entered the office of a preacher and found him pacing backwards and forwards, his hands clasped tightly behind his back. "What's the problem?" asked the parishioner, to which the preacher replied, "The problem is I'm in a hurry, but God isn't." And how often are we perhaps like that? The saying goes that God gave us one mouth and two ears because he wants us to listen twice as much as he wants us to speak. Now, for some, that's a real challenge. Listening takes time, and that's why it's important to spend time with God in our busy lives. And we also need to be ready to listen to one another, to give time to one another. The disciples' journey with Jesus, which had offered so much at the beginning, had turned sour. It had taken that dramatic downward turn. To them, in their despair, the risen Jesus was not immediately recognized. We hear in that passage that when Jesus joined them on the road, they were kept from recognizing him. Very often we too cannot immediately see the risen Christ, although he be walking with us, unless he wills to disclose himself. He met the disciples just where they were, sharing their feelings, and then gradually began to reveal himself to them. The disciples' eyes were opened. Many of our eyes have been opened sometime. Somewhere on our journey through life, we have met with the risen Lord and come to believe in him. It was when Jesus broke the bread that the disciples realized that it was him. That moment back in the upper room, not so long ago, when they had all gathered for supper, probably came back into their minds. A meal together with friends, when they were prepared to be disciples in the world, is one way to describe the times Jesus broke bread with his followers. And it's one way of us thinking about the Eucharist, the Holy Communion, as Christians gather week by week, a time when we're fed and prepared to live as disciples in the world. As soon as the disciples' eyes were opened, they were fixed again on Jerusalem as they returned there with news for the next part of their journey. From that time, they had a purpose for their journey. They wanted to share something that had happened to them back home, the important news. And as Easter people, that sight of God at work in our lives is key to our message to the world, that Jesus is indeed alive and that we have hope in him. And the disciples' journey involved then going. I can remember an occasion after my confirmation I had with my vicar. I was helping out at the Sunday school, which met in the hall next door to the church at the same time as the service. And after we'd finished Sunday school, I arrived outside the church door to be met by the vicar, who was all ready to shake people's hands as they left. And I asked him, "Has the service finished?" And he very quickly replied, "Worship has ended, Karen, but the service is just beginning." The disciples could have decided that because of their feelings of being let down, their despair and their apparent hopelessness, that they wanted no more to do with Jesus. They could have been angry and allowed their human emotions to jeopardize that continued relationship with him. They could have easily given up on their journey, but the presence of the risen Christ was so strong that their downcast feelings changed instantly into joy, a joy that made them more determined than ever to share him with others, to stand up with boldness, to endure suffering and hardship. That same risen Christ is here today in our worship, in our reading of God's word, in the breaking of bread. He wants to be part of our speaking, of our listening, of our vision and our walk. The only decision we need to make is whether we will journey with him no matter what. Sometimes our journey will be smooth, at other times it may be very rocky. Life may be dark, or at other times full of light. But God in his mercy takes care of the pain and the hurt, of the joys, of the triumphs, and uses all of that to shape us. He promised that whatever happens, he works for good for those who love him. The good thing about the Christian journey is that we are not only journeying together as Christians, but that we are journeying together with God. You could say that we are journeying together for God and with God. So in that gospel passage, which I've just described, I feel we have a model for the church, particularly in Dorset, which is my area of responsibility. So here are my three words. The first one is encounter. It's interesting that you have a youth group with the same name. It's an important word. The walk along the Emmaus Road was not the first encounter those disciples had had with Jesus. For they had set their hopes in the fact that he was the one already to redeem Israel. They had heard and seen something of his teaching and maybe how he had dealt with people and liked what they saw. They had witnessed news of Christ's death and rumours of his resurrection. The Christian life begins with encounter. Whether it be in an encounter with Christians or an encounter with Christ himself, lives can be changed and turned upside down. There are many living with puzzlement around us today. They speak about hope, and they speak about fear. In fact, we live at a time when there is much perplexing people. What will Brexit mean? How will life will be for me in retirement? When there's already so much debt, how am I going to fare? How will I manage, or my children or my grandchildren manage? A great deal of anxiety around confusion, hopelessness. And therefore, our calling as people who know Christ is to get alongside them, to help others who do not know him, to have an encounter with him. To get alongside them as Christ gets alongside us, whether through practical concern or by sharing something of the hope and trust and peace that we've experienced. One of the joys of my role are the many confirmations. And just hearing amazing stories of things that God has done in people's lives. People who are all ages and for all sorts of reasons have suddenly encountered him. People who can testify to the love of God revealed through the love of either the local church and then explained to them. Those who knew new hope when life seemed completely hopeless. And individuals wanting just to say yes to following Christ because of his welcome and the welcome of the local church family. Our calling is to make disciples, and our churches therefore need to be places where people's eyes can literally be opened to the wonder, the power, and the love of Christ. Are you here a place of encounter? How do you help people get alongside others, speak and listen to enable them to know Jesus Christ? We are to look at all those we meet with the eyes of Christ, and we're looked for where God is already at work. Without encounter, there will be no church. And that, for me, is the important thing that we should be about. It's not primarily about growing our churches for the sake of growing them. Growth should be a byproduct of our care for other people because God cares for them. It involves our work as churches, our worship as churches, our welcome as churches, and our word as churches. My second word is one I've used quite a lot already, and that is journey. As churches and Christians throughout Dorset, we are on a journey together. We may be different, we may prefer to do things in very different ways, but we are united in our commitment to Christ and our determination to make a difference in our world. Therefore, how we journey together, I think, is really important. That means learning from one another. It means walking alongside one another and supporting one another, sharing together, one with another, the resources that God has given us. Dorset is a place of much difference. Not only are two places, be they villages or market towns or seaside towns alike, but there are considerable disparities. Many parts of Dorset, as we know, are populated with second homes and those with good incomes, whether it be retirement incomes or employment. However, just this week, it was highlighted that Portland and parts of Weymouth are among the poorest places in our country. And we have parishes of prosperity in Poole next door to those with considerable social need. Partnership, therefore, is essential as we journey together with one another's interests at heart. Churches need to consider how and who they can partner with. Journeying together also broadens our experience and understanding of the breadth of God. And as we walk together, sharing stories and our own and finding a common vision with purpose, we can learn much more about God. That's why I'm so interested in pilgrimage. Not only that it connects us with our past, with those who have prayed and travelled as people of God in centuries gone by, but it also enables us to draw alongside others today, to journey with them, even if it's only for a couple of hours or so. My vision for journey would also include sharing with those who care about stuff that we Christians also care about. One of the roles that I have as bishop is to connect with people across the whole of the county and to understand what the issues and the concerns are. In Dorset, there is becoming an increasing problem with elderly isolation. People no longer able to get out of their homes, or who lose, usually through the death of the partner, their ability to socialise and to get out again. Our churches have so much to offer here as we partner and journey with other agencies to alleviate such things as loneliness or homelessness, which is also a problem in Poole, or poverty, as in the need for food banks and debt advice. This is not the time for rivalry or competition. And I'm really encouraged by places like Purbeck and Weymouth and Poole, where church leaders get together to pray across the traditions and share and work for the good of all. And my third and final word is expectancy. I just love the end of that Emmaus walk. It's as if the two friends forget what they were going to Emmaus for in the first place. Because as soon as their eyes were opened, they hurried back to Jerusalem to tell everyone what had happened. It was so important, that telling, that all their plans for whatever they wanted to do there had been forgotten. After this encounter, their minds and their hearts must have had a really new expectancy. Here was the most amazing thing. Is there nothing that God cannot do? When I was an archdeacon, I used to joke that I had to hold in my mind that God was doing so many wonderful things out there, because at that moment on my desk were a pile of difficult situations and problems. And it's easy, isn't it, for us to see the glass half empty. And this is more so now when the church gets often a bad press, or is criticised or at best ignored, when numbers in some of our churches are dwindling or congregations are getting older. The fact is that we could easily get into a negative spiral if we were not careful. And then who wants to join a group of people that give no hope at all? When I meet people who have had an individual encounter with the living God, or when I see churches really making a difference where they are or journeying together in support of one another, it lifts my spirits. But not only that, it convinces me that God is a God of miracles. He who created the earth and the heavens cares for you and me. And isn't that fantastic? If we take the promises of the Bible seriously, then we can expect great things. My vision is that the churches of Dorset, however they're feeling, small or large, full of resources or needing some help, have that sense of expectancy that God is much bigger than all of us and can do even greater things. It means developing a trust for the future, which is not in the human ability, but in God's. It means being conscious of perhaps what little we can do, but how much God can do. It means praying and praising and working with expectancy and hope always in our hearts. It means believing in a God who can and not in a God who can't. A particular timely theme as we celebrate today the beginning of Advent, the church's season of preparation and expectation. I end with a phrase which keeps coming back to my mind as I think about and I pray for the churches in Dorset, and it takes us back to that journey to Emmaus. Remember, after the resurrection appearances and then the ascension of Christ, those disciples become the church, which then spread throughout the world, changing the world forever. Those two disciples told the story to others, waited for the Holy Spirit, came out of that locked room, told the message from one generation to the next, to the next, to the next, so we can gather now. The phrase is, transform lives lead to transformed churches, and transformed churches lead to a transformed world. It all depends on individual encounter, a journey of partnership, and a sense of expectation. Let's live it and do it. Amen.